ready for the podcast that my aunt calls The Mandolin. This is the Bennett Brothers podcast for the Star Wars TV series The Mandalorian, Chapter 3, The Sin. And I'm Jerry Bennett.
And I'm Joel Bennett. Thank you for joining us. I didn't know she called it that.
She's like, when are we going to watch The Mandolin? No, I just don't.
Did you call her Mandalindy? Because her name's Lindy.
Oh, that's good. That's good, too.
Thank you for joining us. We are a podcast dedicated to everything Disney, Marvel, Star Wars, all sorts of
don't
things
keep saying
now.
Disney.
It's crazy. No, we're dedicated to usually Marvel Cinematic Universe, but we are diving deep into the Star Wars universe with the TV show Mandalorian.
Uh-huh.
Mandalorian. If you haven't heard our previous podcast, check them out on iTunes or Kiwi6 or go to BennettBrothersPodcast.wordpress.com and you can get them there. Also, while you're there, you can get all of our other couple hundred podcasts on TV shows like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter, The Inhumans, all the Marvel movies, all sorts of stuff, so the new Harry Potter movies, things like that. So go there and check that out. If you want to join the conversation, go to Facebook.com/Bennett Brothers Podcast. Hit us up on Twitter at Bennett Bros Pod or send us an email, BennettBrothersPodcast@gmail.com. Also go over to Patreon.com/Bennett Brothers Podcast. If you're not familiar with Patreon, it's a way to support artists out there making things like anything, any art. So we're doing this, and if you go there, you can get exclusive minicasts. It just requires you to donate up to like $1. And
well, not
you
up
get,
to.
Or, you know.
Minimum. That'd be great.
That'd be great. If you don't do that, that's fine. But if you do that, we love it. It keeps us going
here. I think
you should
stop saying it's fine. I think it's like you have to do it.
Yeah, you have to do it.
You have to do it.
You're required. No, but if you don't want to do that, the only thing you actually have to do, and if you agree with it, go to iTunes and give us that 5-star review because that helps us out too.
But if you do donate there, that actually helps us keeping our freeing up our time more to actually do more of these podcasts and stuff, because that's a good part.
And if you keep, and if you do it, like we told Ryan Palooch when he donated, we'll make these Patreon.com/Bennett Brother Podcast adverts much shorter.
Oh yeah, yeah. Ryan, it's time for another donation so that we don't have to keep saying this giant commercial at the front. And everybody else then should thank Ryan.
Yes. So go there and do that. We are going to talk about this latest episode, The Sin. We're going to spoil the heck out of it, like we always say. And we're going to get into it here shortly. But before we do that, we're going to touch on a little bit of news.
Well, no, instead of news, there's nothing news yet.
Jerry's giving me the news flag.
A bunch of DC news out there, which is fine. Yes, they're
Direct
making R-rated
news.
Movies. And they're not making the universe, except that they are making the universe, because they're never
gonna
going to stop making the universe.
Wonder Woman
was great.
We're done
with it.
Was great.
Meanwhile, you know,
Aquaman was great.
The DC Harley Quinn movie and Suicide Squad, which are both already buried into that, and The Flash and everything, is still all happening. But the only news I want to do is we're going to go at, yes, Joel, it's time for our infamous Get Pierced segment.
Oh, we're getting pierced.
Because I got connected from Ed Pierce. Ed Pierce is a longtime listener.
Never
one time
it.
Enjoyer. Yeah, we don't know if he's enjoying.
We don't
watching.
Know if he's ever actually watched any of,
shows any of these
shows. Podcasts on.
But he did comment that I threw out a comment from last time, so he responded saying thanks. Oh, no, he said, it's about time I get mentioned.
Oh, there, that makes more sense. Thanks.
And he says, since now, see, I'm reminded of this because you mentioned Disney. His response was, since you are now an all Disney property podcast, he can't wait for our next episode covering Frozen 2, Electric Boogaloo. Which, again, the Boogaloo, that was good. But as I said in the response back, is we will not be covering Frozen 2 ever.
No, we will not.
No, unless there's a giant Patreon donation, then heck yeah.
Or some, the Hulk shows up or something.
Then all this resentment towards Frozen, I will just have to let it go.
I don't have resentment. That was terrible. That was terrible. I don't have resentment. I actually saw it on Broadway, too, so I enjoyed Frozen. But we will not go any further down it than that. Yes. There we go. Any more
down
news?
The Mandalorian hole.
Mandalorian hole. The Mandal
no,
hole.
So now we are going to talk about Chapter 3, The Sin, the exciting third episode of The Mandalorian. And I will say, before I ask your opinion, I will say, this is a great show. This is a great show. Okay, now Joel, what did you think of this
No,
episode?
This is, as Jerry says, a great show, and I think it's proving it all over the place. The reviews are in, they're coming, people are loving it. Everyone's talking about it. You see it everywhere. I read a review because I like to read reviews and see what people are saying. I still have people saying, can't tell what his emotions are. He's wearing that mask. And then I look down at the comments, and it's like 300 comments all going, you're an idiot. You're an idiot. You're an idiot.
Yes.
Stop
if you can't
it. If you can't understand when he's sitting in there and he goes to look at
I'll
his handle
the,
with
the
ball
episode.
And like the
I'll
emotion is going
to.
Points, come yeah. on now. Come on now, people. No, this episode was fantastic. It's directed by Deborah Chow.
Which I will also bring up in the episode.
Okay.
Details about her.
In the episode? Does she make an appearance in the episode?
No, I talk about it in here.
Oh, okay.
I just got some facts.
I got facts too.
Well, are yours relevant to this particular moment?
Sure. I mean, well, I was giving some basic behind the episode before we dive into the episode, but I did enjoy the episode a lot. So how did you feel about the episode?
I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was, I mean, this is some of the best TV out there right now. It's almost hard to say it's TV because it's so good. And they just announced that whoever third party carries the checks this, they've actually said that it's past the Stranger Things season 3 as far as viewing, watchability, all the other stuff. I don't know how they metric that, but that's kind of exciting that, mm-hmm. you know, it's really good. This episode had a wow moment for me, like out loud wow.
I think it's that one, like most people, it's a nerdy wow moment, wasn't it?
It's just great.
It's very nerdy.
It's great. Now this show, this show is doing stuff that I didn't think it was going to do beyond being just the cool man without a name Clint Eastwood look. But now that they brought in Yodel, the fact that he, you know, there's a different level of caring and of love and mm-hmm. people just losing their mind for this little green.
It was a little puppet.
Yeah.
Little CGI puppet. It was puppet crazy. To some point, CGI others. You know, this is definitely, like Jerry said, we talked about this in previous podcast, that this is a Western. This is definitely the Stagecoach heist Western. I think every episode has a little bit of something different with a Western on it. When he gets on that speeder and he's chasing away from all the, like, the bounty hunters, and it's a very much a Stagecoach thing where he's like in the Stagecoach and they're shooting back and they're chasing after him. I mean, this thing has Western stuff written all over.
And Eastern stuff like Lone Wolf and Cub. I think we mentioned that briefly last mm-hmm. time, which is a great comic book series that's been turned into a movie series.
Yeah, I mean, this is going back to the roots of Star Wars being a Western samurai, you know, feel to it, which is great. Which is great.
Eastern. It's a Western Eastern.
There you go.
Or it's an Eastern Western. So let's get into this.
I was also going to say... where did I put that? I put that near the end, and I don't remember. I'll get back to it. Anyways, go on.
Well, we're heading back to our original planet where the bounties are picked up and where the Mandalorians are based. And I can't
where are you putting the director in this conversation?
Oh, just at the end.
Are you going to go at the end? Why don't we go in the beginning where she's the one who directed this episode?
Yeah, I'll give you your stat
because I know what your fact is going to be. We can save it at the end. But this is Deborah Chow.
Deborah Chow.
This is the first live-action Star Wars to be directed by a female. That was, I know the other fact too, but I'll leave the other fact for the ending for you. But that I thought was interesting. You know, it's cool to see, you know, the diaspora of people working on Star Wars and loving Star Wars, and it's great. Okay, so please continue. So
no, I agree.
He's heading towards the planet,
and we see little Yodel come out of his mm-hmm. pod, and he starts playing with the metal ball. And at this point, I'm pretty sure that this little puppet may be cuter than Baby Dory in Finding Dory, which up to this point was the cutest thing I've ever seen on film. When Baby Dory would run around in that little voice, I'm like, get out of here, make a whole movie of that. So this thing is just.
It's quite adorable. It's got you went from, like, I don't know if you've seen the meme for it, but like you have the Ewoks, and then you have like BB-8,
the Porgs,
and then the Porgs, and then you go to, yeah, they've really refined it. They took what's his name from Gremlins,
Gizmo.
Thank you. I was thinking Gidget. I'm like Gidget.
Gizmo. They took Sally Field.
They took Gizmo and they just made him cuter as well. So yeah, totally one adorable.
And so we get a hologram here of Greef Karga's, whatever his last name is.
Yeah, Greef Karga's.
Oh, I got it right. And he's basically saying, Mando. He's basically calling, like, if he was calling Lando.
I like
Mando.
I wrote that down here, too. I'm like, it's so close. So Mando's his nickname. But is he called Mando because he's a Mandalorian?
That's how I take it. And too. I think it's spoken that he might be the only one anybody interacts with. And that comes up to a line of dialogue that comes up later. I wonder how that plays out.
Like they're only allowed one up at a time.
Well, we hear that thing, but like, what are they all doing down there? Well,
so I like I also like the way he's standing in this. He's doing the Superman pose with his hands on his hips.
Yes.
And this is the way they communicate in this universe. So it's tied right into the episode.
So how do you feel about the Greef character before we get to where he is at the end of this episode? I mean, at this point going into it, did you see him in any particular light as, oh, he is nothing, he's a bad guy, he's a good guy, he's a friend? Where did you see him before we get towards the end of it?
He is
someone with honor?
A friend. Yeah, someone who was a friend. He knew him and he was cordial with him. They were friends. That's the way I look at it. The same way Lando is a friend with Han, but Lando turns on Han because of the bigger picture. Maybe not as close but friends, but they have more history. Maybe they have more history here, but I don't know.
I mean, obviously he's been a success. They've had a successful business relationship is what I got from this. So we land at the shipyard where we see other ships landing. And it reminds me as he's walking through this, we have the desert in the background. I saw a video that came out this week that showed, and I cannot, for the life of me, unfortunately, I didn't connect this on something on Facebook. There's a video showing how they're making visuals now without using green screens. They're doing this projection onto walls that ties into the camera. So if you're in the middle of the shot and the camera's shooting you and there's a background in the back and the camera moves or whatever, the background will shift because it's a 3D model that they've done mapping stuff and it's tied into the camera so that from the camera's perspective, it looks like you're wherever you need to be, as opposed to green screens have a flatness to them. I mean, you can put three dimensionals, but this new camera effect, I've read that they're actually utilizing some of this. Lucasfilm has put in some crazy amount of money over the last 5 years helping to develop this new technology, and I wish I had the name of it in front of me, but it is awesome because from the camera's perspective, if you're shifting left and right or up and down, the background perspective in real time is shifting so that the actors aren't just seeing a green screen. They're seeing this, and it's helping them. It's just crazy, and it's a lot of this is being, and I was actually having seen that video online, seeing it in play there. You know, it's the technology is insane. It is getting back to George Lucas in Phantom Menace, where his initial thought was like, well, let's just make all of it in a, you know, a green screen. We'll make the ground. That's all it is. And then we kind of gone away from that because actors were they needed textures, and J.J. Abrams like, I'm going to build the environments. But now they're going back towards like, well, we don't have to build the
combination of the both of them.
They can see it, but it's still all fake. It's projection mapping. It's all of those kind of effects that are being done now. So he is walking through the marketplace.
I also want to point out, and we talked about this in the first episode, there, for me at least, and a couple other people, but like there was a population problem. It didn't look like the city was full enough, or it looked like it was on a set kind of feel to it. It just didn't feel like the grandiose scale of the movies as far as population is concerned. I have not felt that since that first episode, and this episode is a prime example of I didn't feel very on set. I didn't feel like we have a couple actors.
I felt a little bit.
Did you?
When we see the wide shots, we see the bigger city, but then we saw a couple shots where it feels like they just built, which they probably did, they built one street or one street and a half. It didn't bother me. It just, you're in a tighter space than Tatooine.
The street you're talking about felt like it was like in a ditch.
But the camera was dead because the roof we were next to was right there, and we didn't see past that roof because there was another alleyway there. But yeah, that sequence did feel like you're in a ditch, and I was like, oh, is this just a two street city? But we do see early on and later that it is a much bigger city. So he's walking through this marketplace with the pod open. Did that draw any attention to you? Like, because we've seen him walk when he's out in the desert with the pod open and closed, and now he's walking through a wretched hive of scum and villainy with this prize walking through. And yes, he's a foreboding figure who would not want to mess. No one would want to mess with him. But at the same time, it's like, why don't you close the pod? I mean, visually it works for us to see him and to see Yoda looking around at everything and taking that in and being adorable. But it's like, should you close?
But maybe he kept it open because he cares about Yodel.
Fair enough.
So weird. He cares about Yodel and he doesn't want to keep Yodel confined to a pod. But I'll look at it that way, and I think that works. But yeah, it's a good point. I never even thought about that.
Practically point, that was what
practical.
So we get to the door of the client's place, and we meet a couple of dick stormtroopers. You know, hey, easy with that. You go easy with that.
Like, yikes. Is that your comeback? Is that your comeback? Do you just repeat what I say? Are you repeating what I say? Wow.
Stormtroopers are jerks. Stormtroopers, rabbit season, duck season, fire. All right. So we get in there, and the client, Werner Herzog, is exceedingly happy. He's giddy almost. And so he's there along with the doctor who comes up and scans the baby and says, oh, yeah, baby look good. Baby,
what are they scanning good for? I think they're, you know what I think they're scanning for? Midichlorians.
That is
they're going to tie it in.
That is a true thought process.
They're going to, I feel like they're doing a service to tie in all the eras of Star Wars. And I think that's going to be, as well.
So Mando asks, how many fobs did you give out? And he's like, hey, to the victor goes the spoils. And he says, I gave him out to everybody, but you did it. So he pulls out the ice cream maker. And
you're going to give the history behind that?
I will give it the history. Okay. I got that. Yeah. But and at this point, the music kind of shifts because it goes back to the Mandalorian, the origins. When you see the money, you're like, oh, that's from the Great Purge, from their time. And the music does this little slowdown. To me, that felt weirdly like the movie Conan when they would talk about his childhood in those scenes. It was just, I got that feeling. That's very specific. I know it's very specific. But it had this light, because I've heard the Conan soundtrack a billion times and everything. And in this sequence, we'll talk about the ice cream maker in a second here, but at this point they wheel Yodel out and the baby for the first time makes these baby noises. At this point, he's not really making a noise. And all of a sudden, because at this point, he hasn't talked. So we don't know if he's just
actually talked about this last week about maybe he can talk. Maybe he goes waiting because he's 50.
Just, happy I am to be here. You know? Yeah. But he's in 50. That's such an interesting idea about the lifespan. I mean, obviously, we're basing the lifespan on the human lifespan as we only can, you know, compared to like a snail. Some animal that, you know, a parrot lives to be 150 or whatever those that are. But that's from an animal's brain, mm-hmm. and we're dealing with creatures here that we're saying, well, they're intelligent, they're wearing clothes, they can do this stuff. And is that saying that the species for 50 years can't develop speech in 50 years? Is that
there's so much to look at with this, because obviously
how does it
learn? So we give a galactic year, and which I know they talk about. So that's how everything gets measured, and it's a matter of, you know, evolving and maturing. There's a character in the Wheel of Time series called Loyal, who also, you know, his species ages later. So he's like 90 some years old in the book, which is considered super young for their species. But he's 90 years old, so he's had 90 years of learning things. But it's a matter, yeah, how does that work? I haven't seen anything, anytime I've ever read anything, any fantasy, that really gives in-depth knowledge about, like, oh, it's not that person's 100 years old, but they have the mentality of a. I guess an example would be like a dog. How we say, like, every year,
it's still an animal's brain.
Dog.
It's still an
it
animal's
is true.
Brain. It's
it
not,
is true.
Yes, for them, it's developing faster and stuff. But this is the cognitive thought process. The only one I would even
Aren't
come close to.
Are we all animals, Jerry?
No. The only thing I would relate to this in terms of longevity of life that I always thought was an interesting approach is the Brian Michael Bendis book Powers, where the main character is immortal, but after like 70, 80 years, everything gets fuzzier beyond that. So he really doesn't think past that, because his brain, you know, and there's been other ones with immortals where it's like, well, does the, you know,
True Blood had Eric's maker, who was like super old, so he kind of saw the world a little bit differently. But yeah, it's really, I always find it's a fascinating subject. These creatures. I mean, obviously we've had Yoda, who's been around for what? Who's 600 years old?
900
years old, and we've seen the way he kind of lives his life and all that. But it still doesn't. It's easier to say he's wise versus he's developed.
I agree.
Yeah.
So back to what this table, this device here that has the Beskar in it. This is called a Kimtano. And the reason this is even a thing is there is a 2-second clip during the evacuation of Cloud City in Empire Strikes Back where everybody's running, and there's this guy running by, and his name is Wilro Hood. That's actually a character name. Mm-hmm. There's a picture of him, Joel.
I have a picture over here,
yes,
too.
Yes, and he's just one of the many props that after, you know, a movie's been out for 40 years, people look at every frame and this guy runs by with what looks like a homemade ice cream maker. And it's always
it probably
been a joke.
Is a homemade
and, well, it easily could have been. And the fact of the matter is there's like, been, there was a convention I saw online where like literally 200 people dressed up just like him and they all walk in a long processional. It's
That's
hilarious.
Fantastic.
So this, basically this was the movie, the TV show, just like they mentioned Life Day in an episode. Mm-hmm. They're bringing this back and bringing and making it something relevant, even though it was this small moment.
John Favreau actually posted a picture of this thing before the
movie.
Yes, he did. On his Twitter.
He tweeted that twit, as the kids say. So, yes, that is what that is, a Kamtano. And we see all of the Beskar in there. We see the baby go away. And at this point, Mando asks for the plans for the baby, and immediately the client turns. He's like, he doesn't like that.
It's like, you never do that. You don't
he's
do
like,
that.
Why are you, you know, you're like, you're, that's not, you're breaking the code of the guild.
It's not your job.
And as that's happening, also the stormtroopers are kind of moving in, like, is something going to go down here? And he makes the comment that finding a Mandalorian is more difficult than finding the steel. The Beskar steel, which I thought. So that also makes me think how much of the Mandalorians, because in this episode, there's like at least 12, and plus children and stuff. There's a lot of Mandalorians there. But so that's, he gets his, he reevaluates the you know.
Did you say plus children?
Yeah, the found, the
whatever. Did we see children?
I thought we did. I'm in the first episode, I thought we saw a couple of kids playing on the ground with helmets on. I'm 95% positive.
I'm vague on that. Maybe I should go back and listen to the Bennett Brothers podcast in the first episode.
So, and then we get hit with the title. Boom, Mandalorian, Chapter 3, boom, boom. The Sin. And so he goes to the hidden Mandalorian base that he just walks through, and people walk down there. Yeah. Again, we don't know. We're not seeing these guys outside of this area, so we don't know. So he comes in. There's lots of Mandalorians. They notice the container, so they're like, oh, that's a lot of Beskar. That's a lot of Beskar. And we go past and we see this the design of the Mythosaur up on the wall that leads us to where the Forager. And the Forager sees this and puts it down. And even she is slightly taken aback because that's so much.
Do you mentioned this in the first episode. Do you think Boba Fett is one of them? Are you away from that thought?
I think no. I don't.
Because there was a question of like that one's in his outfit from the animated show. What's going on there?
Yes, that was an image online that somebody had to kick the height up, and even the colors didn't match. The gain on there. So I think Boba Fett could still show up in this universe because of the time period. But I don't think he's
not a part of that crew.
I mean, he's a clone of Jango Fett, and Jango Fett we assume is a Mandalorian.
Grew up in the Mandalorian lifestyle, we assume, yeah.
We don't have any... I mean, if I'm wrong about this, somebody online, find that for me, but we all assume he's a Mandalorian because he's got the Mandalorian armor and he's able to utilize it and fight, but they don't really cover him in any of the cartoon Clones War series because when they have the whole bunch of Mandalorian episodes, they're all after he's already been, you know, decapitated. So we don't know, and so Boba Fett, how does he tie into any of that? We don't know. And that brings us to... all the Mandalorians are kind of coming in at this part. They want to see what's going to go down. We find out that our hero says that his armor has lost its integrity from the horn.
It's been lying to him all the time. It's just you have no integrity.
And that's one of the things he needs to get replaced. Now this big guy comes up.
Oh yeah,
we're going to call him Big
Man.
Well,
no, he has a name. His name is Paz Vizsla. P-A-Z.
And you got that from
V-I-Z-S-L-A. That is his credit on and the person whose credit that is, I don't know if you know this.
No.
The voice of him, that's Jon Favreau's voice.
Oh, okay, wow.
So now he's played a Mandalorian in the Clone Wars, and now he's played one on the Clone Wars TV show, and now he's played a Mandalorian here, and obviously it's his show.
I have not read anything about any of these Mandalorians being, like we talked about Boba Fett, we're in the cartoon series at all, so
yeah,
I don't
no,
know
there's
about
no,
that.
There, yeah, I haven't seen anything about that either.
But he's not happy. He makes the comments like, we live hidden like sand rats, only come above ground one at a time. He calls out our hero as a coward, and then they get into a fast knife fight. And I'm wondering, how far is this going to go? Because he seems real resentful that he's going up there. And I don't know if that's based on any history between the characters or what. That's interesting scene until the
they
Forager.
They were both Dothraki, and so they always have to fight like that. I know, I brought up Game of Thrones. That was not fair. Dothrakis fight all the time. It's just what they do. Mandalorians.
And then the Forager, who kind of is a leader in this scenario, basically...
she's like a religious leader, too. Yeah. So.
And she may say, hey, if you're going to walk if you're going to walk that way as a Mandalorian, you are both hunter and prey. How can you be a coward? And then she asks the question, have you ever removed your helmet? He's like, no. Has anybody ever removed it? He's like, no. And
do you think that's true?
I don't know. Well, here's the question. Because Debbie, then, my wife, brings up the question, how do you eat in that thing? How do you sleep in that thing? And it's like, that's true. It's like every piece of food, does he have to go like this?
Under his
underneath?
Helmet?
You know, does he straw everything? We don't know. I mean, it's...
Does the visor slide
it's
over?
It's silly. It's silly. But again, they showed us the toilet on this series already. So all things are game. Up to this point, we had no idea if these creatures in this other world all had no, you know, waste deposit system in them because we didn't know. Mm-hmm. So I think the whole idea of have you ever removed your helmet and has anybody ever done it before you? I think that has to be in reference to in front of anybody else.
Who's not a Mandalorian.
Or anybody, or even a Mandalorian. I'm saying he goes to his private space in his ship. The idea that he never takes the helmet off to go eat something, to go sleep, to shave, to wash your face, whatever that stuff is, that can't be. That can't be. I mean, it can be, but it shouldn't.
I agree with you. And
I think it has to be more
looking
like,
back at
has anyone done, has anyone in the, and has any, in other words, I think the phrase would have made more sense if this is the way it's interpreting. Has any outsider ever seen, have you taken your helmet off in front of an outsider? Has an outsider ever taken your helmet off? As opposed to.
Which is interesting because that has never been, I don't remember that being established in this, obviously in the Clone Wars or in the Rebels TV show where one of the main characters was a Mandalorian who is an outcast Mandalorian, but she came back. In the Rebels TV show, like, she took her helmet off in front of people all the time. In Clone Wars, they took their helmet off in front of people all the time. Django did too. I mean, obviously, we
unless saw this is all something that takes place after the Great Purge,
and it could be, new, and this could be to hide their this could be to hide their numbers.
Well, also, yeah, there's a good point. I mean, now that I think about this. Also, we see in the flashbacks, if we're to assume that the child that we're seeing is him and his parents and everything, clearly they're not wearing helmets. So,
This
might be something that's been designed as part of the new. Going forward,
could be this tribe of Mandalorians too. I mean,
and also this we get our first reference to "This is the way," and so he says, "This is the way." You say, "This is the way." This is that phrase is coming into here. We're hearing it here. It's very similar to "I have spoken," which was the first two episodes. You know, till all are one.
Oh, jeez, good journey.
Good journey. Oh, jeez. No, you give me grief. I'm doing Transformers movie, and you're doing He-Man.
Masters of the Universe, Jerry, not He-Man.
Oh, okay. He's asked if you want to use the Mudhorn, the creature that he fought there as his signet, and he feels that he's not worthy. And she's asking why. He's like, well, the enemy helped me in battle. Why did it help you in battle? It didn't know it was his enemy. He goes, well, instead of using the excess that I would use to build a signet, however that would be on his armor, mm-hmm. I don't think we've actually seen, if we have, I'm not wrong, like how big that would be, or if it's just a small indent or whatever it is on his armor. She says, we're going to take the excess of the Beskar and use it to form whistling birds. And then
won't see those ever again.
And then he says, take the reserve some of the excess for the foundlings. And she says, this is the way. And he goes, this is the way.
And they make those little bullets.
Yeah. So then we cut to a foraging sequence. And then we see that she makes for him 12 whistling birds, foreshadowing mm-hmm. that they are. And also she foreshadows that they are rare. Now, I don't know if they stored more in there. There could be more, but there's 12 that come out. And I bring the number up because there's some numbers coming later. And I always think, like, are we gonna follow down this path?
Sure. Because
we're talking about his ammunition, be it bullets, lasers,
flamethrower,
yes. Mm-hmm. We have another foraging flashback in the same time. And this time we get to a little bit more of battle droids and we see what happens. We see his parents basically do a Krypton, send the child into the pod or whatever. He puts them, the two parents put him in there. We see an explosion. My first question is, why did they not get in there with him?
They have to fly away in the Twister.
No, it's because the door closed. They get blasted.
Yeah, I go to Twister just then.
Then we see a giant
battle. I want to point out, so that the ship that flies through there was actually a, where did I have that written down? It is a Separatist HMP droid gunship, which we first saw in Revenge of the Sith. That's when it first made its appearance there. But for me, the big goofy, like, oh my god moment. Well, for me, I don't know if this is for you, but when you see the battle droid,
we saw him in the first flashback in episode one.
Did we see a super battle droid?
It was a second.
We definitely didn't mention that on the podcast.
No, it was because that first flashback was just seconds here, second there. But it was.
But that was my like, oh my god, it's happening. Because that's awesome. I love when they connect to the first three movies because it's very rare that that happens in the later movies.
Yes, exactly. In The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi, where we haven't seen any of those characters' traits from the prequel. Obviously, we didn't see any of the prequel things that we saw initially in the prequel. We never really saw in the original trilogy, unless it's Hayden Christian who shows up as a ghost, you know, or Coruscant. They didn't do that.
I mean, like Yoda, but like, yeah, anything that was created.
Anything that was created, it bypassed this time period.
All the technology.
Now we're, So
I love it. That was my excitement moment for the episode.
So I said that we get a similarity to the Superman origin here, which is also paralleled recently in the latest episode of Watchmen, which we had a Superman origin, which I thought was kind of fun. Speculation time here. Obviously, if that child is our main character and we see the battle droid open the door and hold the gun at him, what's going to save him? I think we're going to see that. Here's wild speculation time because of the time period and everything. He gets saved by Ewan McGregor's Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Oh, that's crazy talk.
As
I'm like sorry, it, but as, that's crazy
again,
talk.
Again, Oh, they've
did they
kept
film it already? I mean, that would be...
Well, A, they're filming a 6-episode series. B, he's been lying that thing... He's known about that for 5 years. I'm saying that he could come in and swing around. Or another idea, people are speculating, like I read about this, he gets saved by Yoda. And then maybe he has a personal connection to that species, and that's why he has such a representation, why he's saving this. We don't really know his motivation for saving the child. We don't know other than he's so adorable. Cute. He's so cute. So that's all we have. So what is mm-hmm. what is the speculation?
I mean, they also talk about he's an orphan. So then, like, the Mandalorians have a respect for orphans.
So do you want to say he's Leon from The Professional? No women, no children. That's who he doesn't.
Maybe.
You know.
That'd be wow. We are quoting some fantastic movies today. I want to point that out.
Okay, so now you get the new armor, and I'll notice at this point now his armor is less like Boba Fett now and more like Jango Fett.
Jango, very shiny.
But here's the thing about that is because obviously when he does this, the Forger said, "Oh, you're gonna stand out." And when he walks into the bar, it's like he all eyes are on him. And my thought was like, paint the armor. I mean, those other armors, were that because you said the armor lost integrity. So did he get an upgrade, or did he just get new armor that eventually could lose its integrity too? Well, and if so, paint the armor.
That's a great point, but I think having the armor might be a part of their religion, their war religion.
Why do
that they
paint,
have.
Why do all those guys have painted armor? Is like because it's not true Beskar?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Like, this is so rare. Like, most of the people don't have this Beskar.
But we also saw in the first episode when the guy had the plate there and he touched with the blade, and we've seen it take a blast. It is Beskar, but is it older Beskar? I'm just
maybe
curious.
It's also one of those things that's also like it gets as it gets damaged, that's a scar, and it should,
yeah,
they
I'm
like
just
that.
Curious
I think
about
it's a religious
paint.
Thing.
I'm just
really
curious
do.
About the painting thing and like why paint? What can you paint? And you do that so you don't stand out. I don't know, but that's something I thought about that. We see obviously he gets called over to Carl Weathers' table, Grief's table, and. I wrote down here because he goes Mando, and it's like, is that because he's the only Mandalorian, which we talked about? He asks, "Hey, who else had tracking fobs here?" And he's like, "Everybody does." And my question comes up to you, and it comes up later on: tracking what? Do we have to go back to the first episode and watch it again? Because when I call, the client basically says, "Hey, all I have," because he goes, "Where's the track?" He's like, "All I have is this information and this information, but because you're the best, you can put those two things together and figure out where."
Does he call it a tracking fob or a fob?
Whatever. No, he says tracking fob. I'm 90%. Well, but I'm saying, no, because I wrote, all have tracking fobs. And then I said, tracking what? So what are they tracking? Did the client and the doctor give something that they've obviously put inside this small yodel, if they had it at one point? We don't know if the yodel's from there, if somebody stole it. We don't know where the origin of this pod came from, if they found out about it or what. But I'm just curious, what is being tracked?
They mentioned that in the first episode that the tracking fob leads him to the planet, but it doesn't get him close enough. And then he's got to figure it out on his own.
I have to go read back and
no,
watch the first episode.
I totally don't think so.
How is he tracking him? How?
I think this question is not that important.
Well, none of these questions are important.
No. But like that's a minor question, is what I'm saying. I don't think it's.
But it
I don't think it's worth. I don't think it's worthy to go.
If the next episode they're able to track him to the next planet because they know they can track him, then it's like, hey, I've seen enough shows where, like, even if there's a tracker implanted in you, characters dig those things out in fiction all the time. So what is being tracked?
They put a thing in their nose and they pull it out with a...
Yes. You made me do that. So
I made you do that. I'm saying is I don't know if that's going to be a plot point coming forward if it's just one of those things that was that one line dialogue that says, hey, the tracking fob gets you close, gets you in the area, but it can't pinpoint it for you.
No, because also remember when they were leaving, he got attacked at one point and he was fighting those characters off and IG-11 was there. I'm just trying to figure out what is the tracking.
The tracking the pod that he's in.
The pod's useless later. So we find out Grief says, hey, he's happy because he's also rich. He pulls out of his pocket, in his breast pocket, that he's got some Beskar, so he's happy. He basically tells our hero, take some time off. Go to the Twi'lek healing baths, which I also hear people online saying Twi'lek because maybe they read it that way. It's Twi'lek. Anybody online, anybody listening to this podcast, it's Twi'lek. I'm speaking to one guy specifically in his podcast when he said Twi'lek, it's Twi'lek. He knows who he is.
And does he listen to our podcast?
He might listen to our podcast. It's Twi'lek, Tim. All right. So he says, hey, he wants to take another job. The next job is going after some Calamarian He's a nobleman's son who skips bail. It's kind of cool to see them, you know.
Yeah.
And underneath, if you read that word, it said, it's a trap!
No, terrible. Terrible, Jerry. Terrible.
No, it's terrible. So then he asks about the kid. And, of course, Grief's taken aback about that. And he's like, hey, I didn't ask. I don't know. But if you really are concerned about it, you know, take this information and report it back to the New Republic.
Got
to
go into the
inner core.
Inner core, report it, and then they're going to come out here and
look. He goes, that's a joke. Yeah, so... and he makes another comment. He goes, well, go ahead and buy yourself a Camptano of spice. Camptano gets mentioned now, so that's a standard phrase here. And he mentions go get spice so that by the time you reach your destination, you'll have forgotten all about it. Spice is something that we've seen in this world several times. Got heavy play in the movie Solo, but that was the spice mines of Kessel. So that's the drug that they have in that universe, or one of them. So he goes, take the ship, get it ready for takeoff. He's determined to go. And what did you think he was going to do at this point? Did you think he was going to do the turn? Did you think he was going to go on? I mean, because this is an awesome moment, but it's also a very, like, our hero's got to do this.
I mean, it's one of, like, that's just it. I didn't, looking back and go, oh, yeah, that makes sense. At the time, I was just along for the ride. I wasn't going, what's he going to do? Like, I wasn't trying to predict what he was going to do.
Well, because they were establishing him with his culture.
But, I mean,
we don't know enough about his culture other than it seems about the Mandalorian culture is about the Mandalorians. And which is interesting at the end of this, what happens, because I would get the idea that the Mandalorians don't necessarily are honorable. I mean, he is, but we don't know. Because again, from our perspective, when we think of Mandalorians, it's like Jango Fett was clearly not honorable. So our view of it, and Boba Fett's not honorable. So we don't know how to interpret that compared to what we also learned on the cartoon series. So with what he's going to do, I don't know, like, the Mandalorian. Would the Mandalorians be pissed that he's doing this? Because it's like, hey, just keep going making money. Just keep going making money.
Sure. So, I didn't know what he was going to do, but I should realize from this series, if they show you this, these are very episode to episode. If they show you one thing, it's going to probably bring it back. Like, all the little whistler bullets, they show it early, they're going to bring it back. They show him playing with the little device, they're going to bring it back. It's like one of those things that... maybe this show was doing a little bit more often than you just don't notice it because you don't pay attention to that foreshadowing too often, but it's there. So I might have been able to call it, but to be honest, I didn't say either way if he was going to go or not. But I loved him. I love the moment because it's
well, that particular moment we're talking about obviously is when he goes to do the knob and he sees that the metal ball is not connected there, and that kind of triggers the change. So this sequence comes back to what you were talking about at the beginning with idiots online who can't read emotion. This sequence has so much emotion. And it's portrayed through not only his actions, it's the actions of the camera, it's the music, it's all those moments. You can see without him doing something, they take into account that we can't see a guy's strained forehead, we can't see Peter Parker's face.
He's crying under there, he's just sobbing under.
We can't see Peter Parker's face like we could in Spider-Man 1. So at the end, whenever he's battling, or Spider-Man 1, 2, and 3, whenever he's battling, he has to lose the mask so we can see Tobey Maguire's face going up and down and emoting, because they couldn't do what they do with the new Spider-Man movies where the eyes can go up and down and help convey that. Or, you know, Iron Man, Iron Man came up with the great solution.
Batman Returns, when he rips his Kevlar helmet off to show his face. Yes. It's like, come on.
That's Hollywood messing with stuff. I mean, that's why I swear to God, when they make that Snake Eyes movie, they're still going to try to figure out a way to make Snake Eyes talk and lose his face mask. It's just going to happen. But there was so much there through the. I watched it the second time, just like listening to the music, listening to the actions, how the camera is doing it, what it's focusing on. I think in some ways, because also when we see his actions following this, there's something going on with me watching it. Is I'm also projecting my feelings on it. I'm like, save the kid. So I'm looking at this mirrored face and I'm putting all mine into it. So maybe I'm actually putting more emotion into it. More emotion into our character than they were.
That's a good point.
So that, you know,
it's an interesting thought. It's an interesting study into filmmaking, because you obviously have radio and the spoken word, they can explain stuff to you. You can read a book and it tells you the emotion. And for film, for forever has always been, you know, the visual medium. But this is giving you less of the visual medium and more of the connection between the viewer and the director or the storyteller, and letting you fill in the gaps. That's an interesting way of looking at it.
Yeah, again, we can do that with anybody. You don't have to see the emotion. Or sometimes people are wearing masks even when you see them. When you're seeing Han Solo in the first one before he shoots Greedo, he's got a fairly straight, common face on him. He could be terrified inside. You know, is the director showing us how to do it, or is he keeping us straight? Even when he shoots him, he goes, sorry for the mess, and he walks out straight like Clint Eastwood. He walks out with no emotion on his face. That is the mask.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we've seen characters all the time using masks, and then maybe we get the emotion of it, for example, in the episode 2 when the mud, what the hell is it called again? The mud creature. Mudhorn. When he, you know, he's so wasted at the end. We see him resign where he thinks he's going to get killed, and he holds the knife up and everything. We're seeing his mask come down through his body movements. They're like, I can't win this fight. And then he's taken aback by it. So I feel like...
I think what you're referencing here is we all wear masks from the movie The Mask with Jim Carrey.
No, I was doing The Mask with Cher.
With Cher?
And Eric Stoltz.
Okay. That one it's we always mask. You see it on. Oh, the mask is on. Oh, it's that one.
Could be worse. Could be Mask 2 with Jamie Kennedy. Yee, son of the mask. You're talking about third.
But it also could have been the TV show Mask, which would have been just as cool.
Mask. God, now I have to go find that track to play it in background.
I hope so. I hope you do.
All right. So.
So he goes off. That's me. He makes his decision. He's going to go and rescue. Yeah. There's no questioning about what's gonna happen here. He like gets up and goes, and you're like, well, he's gonna go get the kid.
First place he goes is to the garbage bin, and he sees that the pot is there, so we're like, oh,
he followed his tracking fob to the garbage bin.
Yes, he heads to a rooftop and he utilizes his weapon and his helmet.
We see a heads-up display
from inside his helmet, which is good, and he's using that to actually surveillance following their heat signatures, as well as I'm assuming that sonic gun has helped to hear sound. Like I can aim it at you to hear better.
So I also, I talked to this one guy I know, and he was, one of the things he doesn't like about the show, he's a military guy, and he's done a lot of like viewing through scopes and things like that. And he's like, it bothers me. He keeps putting the scope in a different part of the mask. Like, where's his eye? Is it in the middle? Is he putting the scope on the side? And I was like, oh, that's pretty deep, dude. That's a deep cut right there. The heads-up display on the inside lets you see through any portion of that mask. That's like I justified it.
Yeah. So he listens there, and we hear the client say, extract the necessary materials and be done with it. So he's extracting the necessary materials and be done with it. And
then midichlorians.
And then we lose some of the information. We don't hear what's happening next. And then Dr. Pershing says, I had the closed captioning on for this. I wanted to get this. He has explicitly ordered us to bring it back alive. No, I have a feeling. Well, I mean, the big picture is like, oh, is it Palpatine? I have a feeling. I think I know who it might be based on who's going to be coming up on the show and the first trailer we saw of a certain actor playing a character. I'm guessing, but I could be wrong on that. But that's what we're hearing about that. Then our hero goes to the front door. The little machine comes out. You know, and then he rips off.
Jerry's doing all the accents right now.
He rips off the door machine. We kind of hear a scream. And I was like, this changed my thought process initially. Like I thought when we first saw this thing back in Return of the Jedi when I was a kid and it comes out, I thought somebody was on the other side just using that as a scope to tell. But now I'm more like, it's a droid. Yeah, it makes much more sense. That was just, hey, dude, it was 1983.
But when you look at it, they point out a big flaw of it. Like he knocks on the door and he stays by the door and the thing comes out like 2 feet past him. They're like, where is it?
That
I
is
can't
true.
See anything. Like,
no one's here. You know what would defeat that? A peephole.
But he just grabs
a future people.
I wish he'd have grabbed, broken off, and then beaten the stormtroopers with it.
So then he basically kills this thing. He goes around the back. He blows a hole in the back of the wall. So now we get to time for it's action, action, action. I'm not going to go too deep on the details here. But first he takes out 3 stormtroopers, kills 2, knocks 1 down, and then the third one as he's walking away, he kills him. So yep. He's like, I ain't playing around. He kills those 3. Having said that, that means I feel like every stormtrooper he encounters, he kills them all, even though some of them we're not 100% sure on. So he kills those 3. He uses his grappling hook on this one, pulls him back, hits him with a knife. No Wilhelm scream, which I was very happy about. Then he comes in. So that's
going to happen in the series.
Now that's 4. He's killed 4. He goes into the room where the doctor's at. He destroys the torture droid.
Interrogation droid.
Now, Your Highness, we will find out what you've done.
Yeah, that was awesome. That wah, 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 wah. That sound effect.
Oh,
that
and I'm the only one doing sound effects.
I can only do so many.
You can also do that same sound effect when you're doing a digeridoo in Australia.
<It's>
See? And he also shoots another trooper, and then he was going to kill the doctor, and the doctor's like, I'm the only reason he was spared.
Dr. Beck for his life.
And all of a sudden, he's gone. At that point, 3, 4, 5, Then he kills a bunch of other troopers, including the ninth. I wrote down here the ninth trooper he killed with his flamethrower, which is brutal. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Their armor is useless.
Yes. So then he gets into a big room, and as soon as it's the big room, he's got nowhere to hide. It's like as soon as you walk in the middle of that room, they're going to come out of those doors. And sure enough, four more surround him. And they're
if
like,
only he has a weapon that he just got earlier in the episode. So
he does a little maneuvering. He tricks them down, and he takes them down with the Whistling Deaths. I did try to watch them and count how many, because again, I said he's only got whatever number
12.
I said.
He said 12.
I'm like. Well, there's four troopers in there. So did he use four or did he use six? Or is he going to have any more of these left? Or I have no idea. Like, you push the button once and it launches them all.
Yep.
And how? But so anyway, so now that at this point he has killed 13 troopers are dead. So how many stormtroopers are in this garrison? Whatever, I don't know, but 13 are gone.
700. It's
so we never see the client at this point. So I'm assuming the client... Yeah, we didn't hear if he was going to run away, but somebody is...
The alarm goes off.
Well, somebody's contacting. Somebody is watching this enough to contact all of the bounty hunters out there.
Yeah, so an alarm goes off when he blows open the wall. When he blows open the wall, there's an alarm system that goes off.
Well, that's what alerted all the stormtroopers, too.
Yes.
So the call goes out on all the tracking fobs. Again, I'm writing tracking what? So are they tracking him because they all know where he's at? They all know where he's going? Or is it because some of them saw him on the street? We don't know the details of that. You said it's not important. Maybe it's not, but I'm just calling this back. We hear Grief say, "Welcome back, Mando."
So you're Carl Weathers.
Yes, and then Mando goes, "Dylan, you son of a bitch." And gives the biggest handshake in the possible. Fantastic. If it bleeds, we can kill it. That's my Carl Weathers.
There it is.
Okay, so he goes, "Hey, put the kid on the speeder." Does that. Our hero does this incredible flip.
Yeah, flips, it was great.
Big fight. Boom, boom, boom. This is the stagecoach you talked about. He threatens the droid. He's like, "Move." Points the gun. He does that. But Grief has his moment where he shoots the droid and he locks him in place so he can't get anywhere. And then we see the flamethrower come out again, but that runs out of gas. He pulls out the big gun and starts vaporizing people, and they're all like...
He's like, "That's a nice gun."
I don't know why people don't have that gun in Chewie's bowcaster, because these are the weapons people are like, "Why are we not all just using these things?"
I want to point out here, this is a deep cut, but one of the hired gunmen, one of the bounty hunters there, is Zabrak, which is the same species as Darth Maul. You can tell with the horns coming out the head and everything like that, which someone had pointed out. I don't know if this is 100% fact.
From Darth Amir.
I don't know if this is 100% true or not, but this is the first, outside of the droids, this is the first alien species from the Clone War, the alien species from the prequels that has appeared in this show. We've seen a lot of species in this show, but this is the first one from that is an alien species from the prequels that is in the show.
Okay.
But I thought that was cool.
In this show, yeah. We did see Darth Maul obviously show up again in Solo.
Yep.
We get to the point, flamethrower runs out, and it's looking bad for our heroes.
And I also, I thought about that, and one of the reasons we're not seeing a lot of the aliens from the prequel movies in this show, because most of them are CGI, and that costs more money. You're not going to see, like, I'm a Clidarian? Is that... What is Watto? A Tardarian? I'm like, Watto is... Or you're not going to see Sebulba's
Annie!
Creatures.
Little Annie!
Yeah, you're not going to see a lot of the CGI. There's going to be no Gungans hanging out, like...
Thank you.
Because it's CG.
If there was
going to
ever be a great purge of any alien race, it's the Gungan. Away with you! Yes. Gordon's alive! It's everybody. So we get to our
big
cheer.
Doo-doo.
We get to our big... I cheered out loud. It was when the Mandalorians come flying in on their... every direction, we see them flying on jetpacks. At least four of them are on jetpacks, plus on the ground, which was... Awesome. I love the variety too. That's another thing. I like the hero, but I like the team aspect. I've always been a team guy. I like teams, X-Men and the Avengers and stuff. That's just more fun. So if he's got all these
other
characters.
You want the Magnificent Seven is what you want.
Yeah. But with a happier ending. Spoiler alert.
Turns out ending.
It's magnificent.
It wasn't the Wild
It was
bunch,
the
OK Jerry.
3 at the end. but we get this great variety. We get our big guy come up with the gun,
Pause.
Which is this incredible looking cool gun. And
I want to point out, like, I didn't see any of these jetpack flying guys bend over and shoot a missile out of their backpack like the toys said they would do.
Jango Fett did that.
Yeah, Jango Fett did that. But none of these guys did. I wanted, like, fire him.
They can't fire him because somebody might choke on him at this point.
Another deep cut. There it is.
So he goes to the big guy and he says, "We're going to have to relocate the covert." So the covert, I'm obviously the covert
operation. Before they come in, too, I want to point this out here. Cargo, he actually goes to him, "I'm your only hope." And I thought that was a nice reminiscent back to "Help Me, Obi-Wan, You're My Only Hope."
Yeah, that's a good call. So. That's a good catch. By the way, he's also taken off. He realizes, we can't beat these guys. So he disappears from the scene. He's the only one. And again, we were talking about, like, people. We never see a giant group of people, but this fight goes on forever. So we saw the Mandalorian already took out probably about 12 different people, and then all these other Mandalorians show up. So that fight goes on even after he leaves.
There's a lot of characters. He's like, you guys are going to have to move your coven, I believe is the word.
He said covert.
Okay.
Covert.
You're going to have to move that. And I'm like, what if they just kill all these bounty hunters? They're going to move anything.
There's too many people would crawl away who watched it and said, I saw like more than one
of them.
There's
so many Mandalorians, yeah.
So they both say, this is the way. So they kind of acknowledge each other. And we get to our ship. Grief is in the ship. And he gets taken out because our Mandalorian glances his head over, which he should have just done this with his eyes. You know, his eyes can look back and forth. But he uses his grappling hook again in another clever way so that he gets out. He shoots him. Did you think Grief was dead at this point?
I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't think that, but he's obviously saved by the magical...
As soon as he landed,
the Bible and the camera in the pocket kind of
again,
thing.
I'll give Debbie credit. She goes, oh, the Beskar saved him. I'm like, oh, absolutely. Yeah, of course it did.
Did he put the Beskar in that pocket? So,
yes, we saw him earlier and he slides it back in there.
So was it an accident or did Mando do that on purpose? Mando?
I don't think he would have done that on purpose.
You don't think he shot him because he knew where the Beskar was?
No, he just shot through he shot through the smoke to get him. So no, I don't
think he's a really good shot though.
I will say there could definitely be a maybe. I don't think he did it, but I can't say you're wrong.
I mean, based off of his Grief's look at the end when he pulls it out and he's like thankful, there's kind of like a sly smile, I believe, at the end there. Where he's just
but you're I'm not saying you're wrong, but the way you're interpreting can also be interpreted a different way. So
he's wearing a mask. I can't interpret what he's feeling.
Damn these masks! I wish they would switch off like the Avengers Endgame where everything is nanotechnology. Like faces on, faces off. Faces on, faces off. Faces on, faces off.
Captain America, what about yours? Nope. We're not doing nanotech for Captain America's face.
No, we're just going to have it rip off in every movie where it comes off somehow because it comes off in every movie. So... as our ship is leaving, one of the Mandalorians comes flying by in a jetpack and gives him the old salute.
I thought that was a little silly. Like the
no, they're part of a
I mean, it makes you go, is there
so obviously these Mandalorians are acknowledging that he's saving this life is a good thing. We don't know how. We don't know why. I mean, it's not like they're just going there to protect him. I mean, are they going there to protect him? When he had the conversation with the big guy and he's like, you're going to have to move it. And he's like, this is the way. It wasn't like, you gave our, now we have to do this because you did it.
I'll give you another way this might be. The idea that they know he was dealing with the Empire and they don't like the Empire because of the Purge or whatever.
They killed all the Empire.
They killed him. So they're defending him. They're like, you did this for the Empire. You got this back. But
That because he goes, this is the way, it's like, no, this is it. This is how we do it.
Okay. I'm just trying to give other examples.
I agree. It's not. That's why we're talking.
I do think it's more of a tribal thing. Like, even if you mess up, even if you do something wrong, we're going to defend you.
But we've already seen the tension between these two characters, and I can see him. If like he had done that, and he comes up there. He's like when he goes, we're going to have to move the covert. The guy's going like, he's like, yeah, because you blew it. But this is the way. You know, it's. I guess.
Yeah, and I don't think they wanted to fight to each other, but they stopped because I think obviously they're a militaristic kind of culture. They're a fighting culture, but it's also like, there's not many of us left kind of thing. Like, so don't kill each other. Mm-hmm. And I think when she came in and said that, it's like...
Could have been that too. Yeah, definitely could have been that. So at the end of that, obviously our hero goes, I got to get one of those, which was a great jetpack. And then to show the happiness at the end, he takes the metal ball off and he gives it to Little Yodel and it's a sweet moment. And then boom, we're down at our
music
ending.
Started to build up there. It almost got to the, but it didn't get to that. I read a little article about the composer of this, whose name I'm not gonna.
Yeah, they keep putting him out, by the way. The soundtrack.
Yeah, I'm not gonna. I mean, his name is. It's kind of hard to pronounce.
I'm gonna get it for you.
Ludwig
Göransson. Göransson. Lauren, your grandson.
How do you say those two dots over the O?
You mean the,
so anyways, he said just doing this series composing, he's like, it was like composing three Star Wars movies worth of music. So
the math makes that true.
Yes.
So at the end we see it's directed by Deborah Chow, and the reason
important, Jerry?
Well, it's important and may tie into my earlier comment about who may have saved our hero as a child, is she's going to be the director of the Obi-Wan TV series. So that would be, in fact, that's already been announced. It's because she's going to be doing that. She's working with Ewan McGregor. Perhaps it will be Obi-Wan who turns out to be the savior in the past.
She's also done a ton of stuff. She's like worked on like a ton of shows. Mr. Robot. I mean, it's like in the, like a lot of stuff. And she also done, she's like Jessica Jones, Iron Fist. So she's like, she's all over the place with her shows. So she's well acclaimed. And yeah, she's going to be the director of the project of the Obi-Wan Kenobi. So right. I don't know what that means, director of the project.
I didn't say it. You did.
And then that's what I've read the articles and like announcing her. I'm like, does that mean showrunner or does that mean?
Was it the project or was there two little dots over one of the O's in the project? The project.
How does that go?
I'm not going to do it again. I hurt myself when I did it the first time.
Also, just because I was looking through the composer's work, he did the Creed movies, which I think is, I enjoyed the music in those as well. He did Black Panther.
That is what he's getting the most notoriety from.
Venom. He did Venom.
It's not so great.
But he did Mandolin. That is better. I'm enjoying it.
Ironically, the one instrument he doesn't use is a mandolin. Yeah. Think about that. That's the only interesting
thing. Saving it for the end.
He uses a rain stick sometime.
Did he use a digeridoo?
How about a degree don't? All right, so that brings us to the end of this episode. I still think this was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I'm so excited for the next episode. Star Wars on a weekly basis. Oh, and after 8 weeks, I'm sure we won't have to wait a year. Well, we have Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, we have Rise of Skywalker.
And so. Then we have to wait a year. Well, no. But then the Clone Wars episodes will be showing up in like February or March, I think that is.
And you're watching The Resistance right now, so you're getting that on a weekly basis as well, right?
Not a good
show. I'll wait till it gets further along.
So that bring again, we'll be coming back with episode 4 or chapter 4, whatever it's called. Hopefully you're enjoying this, and hopefully you're at least watching it. Unlike Ed Pierce, I probably is never going to get Disney Plus ever, but he's still listening to the podcast. Hey Ed, how you doing? Good talking to you. All right, guys, that was it for this week. Look forward to talking to you next week. I'm Jerry.
I'm Joel. We'll talk to you next time.